Hello, this is Beatrice Pavia with the Pantograph of Monday, January 15th, 2018. We're going to start off with a front page story that's headlined, IWU Hosts Special Edition of Handwritten Bible. It is Dateline Bloomington. Illinois Wesleyan University will host a heritage edition of the first completely handwritten and illuminated Bible commissioned in the Western world in more than 500 years. IWU chaplain Elise Nelson Winger said this Bible is, quote, something old that's been made new and will be of interest beyond just a spiritual perspective for anyone interested in good art, creativity, spirituality, and innovation. Several programs on Thursday will kick off IWU's Year with the St. John's Bible, including an ecumenical service and blessing at 11 a.m. in Evelyn Chapel, and a presentation by Tim Turns of St. John's University at 6:30 p.m. in Presser Hall's Westbrook Auditorium. The 7-volume, 1,150-page St. John's Bible was commissioned by St. John's Abbey and University as a way to commemorate the millennium. Each page is 24.5 inches high and nearly 16 inches wide. Work began in 2000, and the final volume was completed in 2011. This Bible combines the use of old-style tools from before the invention of the printing press with modern-day images in the illuminations in what organizers of the project describe as a work of art and a work of theology. The new Revised Standard Version translation was used. The Heritage Edition of the St. John's Bible is a full-size, fine art edition of the original, which is housed in the Hill Museum and Manuscript Library on the campus of St. John's University in Collegeville, Minnesota, near St. Cloud. 2 volumes, the Gospels and Acts, will be at IWU for 6 months. The Pentateuch, which is the first 5 books of the Bible, will be at IWU for the second 6 months. Only 2 other colleges are part of the Heritage Program this year, Yale University and the University of Notre Dame. Winger said, "The Heritage Program was an opportunity to do more than just a one-time program." The university plans to have exhibitions at Ames Library that include other illuminated works that are part of the school's collection. The library also has a collection of smaller versions of the volumes which will be on reserve for people to view. A team of artists use calfskin vellum, quills hand-cut by the scribes, lamp black ink, and various cakes and powdered pigments mixed with egg yolk and water. Gold leaf was applied in a process that includes blowing through a bamboo tube to activate the glue-binding agent. 6 scribes did the calligraphy. Goose quills were used for the main text. Turkey and swan quills were used for heavier letter forms. Winger said, "We live in this image-saturated society. The illuminations really invite you to stay a while with them." Madeline Callahan, a community liaison for the project, said, "Looking at artwork like this, it takes your breath away." She is a coordinator of the Benedictine Oblate of Bloomington Normal. Oblates are lay people associated with the Benedictine community. The Oblates are among those who will be trained as docents to bring the Heritage Edition of the St. John's Bible to churches, Bible study and prayer groups, schools, and elsewhere to give programs or just let them look at it, said Callahan. The artwork is referred to as illuminations rather than illustrations because they involve gold, platinum, or silver. When it is illuminated, you kind of see yourself in the gold. You are a part of it, she said. Callahan and her husband's family have been a part of the project since the beginning. The family contributed money toward the production of Psalm 150. One of the 4 framed texts at IWU includes Psalm 150. It hangs outside the chaplain's office in Evelyn Chapel. The other 3 are on display at Amos. Winger said the illuminations in the St. John's Bible provide 21st century insights that celebrate racial and ethnic diversity and the role of women. An example is the illumination of the Valley of the Dry Bones, a vision described in the Book of Ezekiel, in which the artist included images of the Holocaust, World Trade Center attack, and Rwandan genocide. An illumination in the Book of Genesis, depicting creation, incorporates satellite images. She said, recognizing the multi-faith world in which we live, there are Arabic and Hebrew words in some of the illuminations. And accompanying this story is a little piece that says events that are going on this week. Illinois Wesleyan University will have several events this week as part of a year with the St. John's Bible. These are all events on Thursday. 11 a.m. Thursday at Evelyn Chapel will be an ecumenical service and blessing with local clergy and the prioress from St. Mary's Monastery. At 4 p.m. Thursday in Evelyn Chapel, Tim Turns, director of the St. John's Bible at the Hill Museum and Manuscript Library in Collegeville, Minnesota, will discuss the interfaith power of the St. John's Bible. At Religiosity, IWU's weekly gathering for interfaith dialogue. At 6:30 p.m. Thursday in Presser Hall will be a lecture, A Revolution in Illumination and Imagination, Introducing the St. John's Bible with Turns, and a training session for anyone interested in serving as docents of and ambassadors for the Heritage Edition will be from 11 a.m. to 12:45 p.m. Wednesday. Interested persons should contact IWU Chaplain Elise Nelson Winter at enelsonw@iwu.edu. The next front page story we're going to read is headlined, Town Also Questions EDC Spending. It is Dateline Normal. The Bloomington Normal Economic Development Council has work to do to win back the trust of local government officials. A few days after the McLean County Board's Executive Committee approved a document requesting more transparency in exchange for the nearly $100,000 it gives EDC annually, the Town of Normal staff is asking the Normal City Council to do the same and deny part of a new request for funding. City Manager Mark Peterson wrote in a memo, the staff recommends the council approve the annual contribution of $100,000 to the EDC, but that the town follow the lead of McLean County and require monthly progress reports from the EDC. It is further recommended that the $100,000 to be paid out in the monthly installments, so that in the event that the town council feels that the funding to the EDC is not being used effectively, it can be discontinued. Peterson also recommended denying part of a request for funding for BN Advantage, a local economic development partnership involving EDC and the McLean County Chamber of Commerce. The chamber would receive a requested $35,000, including $25,000 for workforce development and $10,000 for quality of life, but EDC would receive only $32,000 for marketing and communications out of a total request of $82,000. Peterson wrote, town staff is concerned that there has not been enough detail provided as to how the additional funding for the EDC is going to be used. Further, he says, there are concerns about the EDC's capability of moving forward on projects related to entrepreneurship as recommended by the BN Advantage Plan. Peterson told the Pantograph those concerns include a lack of progress in entrepreneurship so far as compared to workforce development and marketing, which have gotten off to strong starts. He said, we are 2 years into it, and it is, to the best of my knowledge, nowhere. We're concerned the organization is not proactive enough. The council will consider the funding when it meets at 7 p.m. Tuesday on the fourth floor at Uptown Station. The meeting was moved from Monday due to Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Bloomington approved a $100,000 annual contribution to EDC with no such strings, and the requested BN Advantage funding for the rest of the fiscal year through April. The county has not approved BN Advantage funding. BN Advantage, quote, called for the creation of a number of special task force groups to develop strategies to improve our community in a variety of areas, including workforce development, business marketing and communication, quality of life, quality of place, entrepreneurship, and data tracking and analysis, Peterson wrote. And in other business, the council will meet in executive session to discuss hiring a public official. The council is working to hire a successor to Peterson, who, before he retires March 31st, and the council will consider a plan for a $29 million building to be built on the northeast side of Uptown Circle by 2020. We're going to move to local news now. The first story is headlined, HIV Town Hall Meeting is Set, Dateline Normal. Leaders from the Illinois Getting to Zero Project want to hear from area residents about ways to bring an end to new HIV infections and strategies to ensure that everyone living with HIV is connected to treatment by 2027. The project will have a town hall meeting from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday at Normal Public Library at 206 West College Avenue in Normal. Among the speakers will be Eduardo Alvarado, the HIV/AIDS Director for the Illinois Department of Public Health. The meeting will be the third Getting to Zero meeting in Illinois and the first outside Cook County. The Illinois Getting to Zero project began in July 2016 and includes representatives of HIV/AIDS patient advocacy groups, public health agencies, and academia. The project's goal is to end new HIV infections and connect people living with HIV to treatment by 2027. Partners in the effort hope that leaders in government, healthcare, and community organizations will recommend strategies by June. A copy of the Getting to Zero report is on the websites for the McLean County Health Department and the Pantograph. The Health Department is among community groups bringing the town hall event to Normal. Melissa Graven, who is the Health Department Communicable Disease Coordinator, said, "We have partnered with the AIDS Foundation of Chicago, Positive Health Solutions, and Central Illinois Friends to provide this opportunity for a community conversation where residents can share their ideas, needs, and hopes about ways in which we can get to zero new cases of HIV infection and zero people living with HIV who are not on treatment." She said, "We want to see an end to HIV in Illinois and realize we need to partner with our entire community, healthcare providers and individual residents alike, to reach that goal." AIDS Foundation of Chicago will provide child care, transportation assistance, and food for people interested in attending the meeting. You should register at http://bit.ly/2miwowg. The Health Department works to prevent and control the spread of HIV/AIDS in McLean County through counseling, testing, community education, outreach, and surveillance. More information is at 309-888-5435. According to the Illinois Department of Public Health, as of June 30th, 89 McLean County residents were living with HIV and 86 were living with AIDS. Statewide, 19,058 people were living with HIV and 19,481 were living with AIDS. HIV attacks white blood cells that protect against illness and can lead to AIDS, a disease that weakens the immune system so the body cannot fight off potentially fatal infections. And this next local story is headlined, Kennedy Targets Gun Violence in Campaign. It is datelined Chicago. Few people running for public office have been more personally affected by gun violence than Chris Kennedy, who was a child when his father and uncle, Senator Robert Kennedy and President John F. Kennedy, were assassinated. Now, the 54-year-old Democrat has made the issue a centerpiece of his campaign for Illinois governor, talking often about growing up without a father and family trips to Arlington National Cemetery, and saying too many people in Chicago and elsewhere in Illinois are dealing with the same kind of pain. The move has brought endorsements from African American leaders, including U.S. Representatives Bobby Rush and Danny Davis, and could help Kennedy earn support in the March primary from black voters who have been disproportionately hurt by gun violence. But it has also put him at odds with Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel and some others, and prompted accusations of race baiting after Kennedy said much of the violence is due to systemic disinvestment in black neighborhoods. He accused Emanuel, the former White House chief of staff, of pushing black people out of the city through a strategic gentrification plan that includes cutting funding for police and public schools. Kennedy told supporters, "Our government needs to be held accountable for subjecting our communities to a life of crimes of survival. We can reduce and control gun violence in our communities, but we need to be honest with ourselves about why it is happening." Emanuel called the comments hallucinatory and said he would like to hear ideas, not insults, while a mayoral spokesman said it was a direct assault on one of this city's greatest strengths, our diversity. Kennedy's other critics, including campaign rivals, called the comment hypocritical, noting he was praising Emanuel not long ago and even donated $5,000 to his campaign. The Chicago Tribune, in an editorial, called it a cynical and divisive pitch for votes. Kennedy is one of six Democrats seeking the party's nomination March 20th for the chance to unseat first-term Governor Bruce Rauner, who is widely considered one of the most vulnerable Republican incumbents up for re-election this fall. Among the other Democrats running are State Senator Daniel Biss and billionaire businessman J.B. Pritzker, who has scooped up endorsements from Democratic county officials and major unions, including the Illinois Education Association. Rush and Davis, who have both lost family members to the city's violence, said they are backing Kennedy because he has put violence prevention and gun control at the top of his agenda. Speaking at a campaign event this month at a church in a West Side Chicago neighborhood where homicides have spiked in recent years, Rush said it was the first time in my lifetime that Illinois has a gubernatorial candidate who knows how violence rips apart a family and a community. Kennedy's father was killed as he ran for president in 1968, years after John F. Kennedy's assassination. "He understands. He gets it," Rush said. "We don't have to sit down and go over violence." Joining them was Nate Pendleton, whose 15-year-old daughter, Hadia, was shot and killed days after returning from President Barack Obama's 2013 inauguration, and Kennedy's running mate, Ra Joy, whose 23-year-old son was fatally shot last summer, apparently by someone trying to steal his cell phone. Our next local story is headlined, Weather Takes Cold, Bitter Turn This Week, Dateline Bloomington. A winter weather advisory is in effect until noon today, but forecasters say it will be replaced by a wind chill advisory due to the arrival of bitterly cold temperatures Monday night, that is tonight. Forecasters with the National Weather Service in Lincoln say McLean County and most of central Illinois will get about 2 to 3 inches of snow by the time it stops sometime Monday morning. Most schools and government offices are closed on Monday for Martin Luther King Day, but a list of other cancellations will be available at www.pantograph.com. There is also a possibility of blowing and drifting snow today, which could affect the evening commute. And then forecasters say things may get uncomfortable. Patrick Bach, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service, said much colder air will come in behind this system. Wind chill values will drop to 15 or 20 below zero on Monday night, heading into Tuesday. A wind chill advisory means that cold air and the wind will combine to create low wind chills. Frostbite and hypothermia can occur if preventions are not taken. Make sure you wear a hat and gloves. But it will be short-lived, Bach said. It will be warmer on Wednesday, and we may get past freezing on Thursday. Temperatures will be back into the 40s by the week. Saturday's high is expected to be around 45 degrees. There is no mention of rain or snow in the forecast for later in the week. Let's read a little bit of news from the Veterans Corner, which is written by the McLean County Veterans Assistance Commission in Bloomington. Did you know that you are more likely to encounter someone in an emotional or mental crisis than someone having a heart attack? Veterans of Foreign Wars Post 454 in Bloomington is hosting a mental health first aid course focusing on the experiences and needs of the military, veterans, and military family population. The session will be at 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. on January 27th at VFW Post 454, located at 1006 East Lincoln Street. The $10 fee includes book, materials, light breakfast, lunch, and snacks. To register, email sunshinebritch@gmail.com or call 309-261-3332. Military.com has reported on another alleged case of stolen valor. Each year, non-veterans lie in order to obtain retail discounts and other preferential treatment. Most states do not forbid this as long as it doesn't involve obtaining state benefits. It is getting harder for real veterans to obtain beneficial treatment from retailers. In some cases, retailers have ceased giving preference rather than have to card the veterans. It is a federal crime to lie about military awards for monetary or other tangible benefits. And here's a question. I am a veteran with an honorable discharge. I have attended a few local funerals for veterans recently and was impressed with the professionalism of the honor guard that performed military rites. What are the eligibility requirements for military rites? And the answer is, according to the Federal Benefits for Veterans and Dependents pamphlet, upon request, the Department of Defense will provide funeral honors consisting of folding and presentation of the U.S. flag and the playing of taps. A funeral honors detail consists of two or more uniformed members of the armed forces with at least one member from the deceased branch of service. The VA can help arrange honors for burials at VA national cemeteries. Veteran service organizations or volunteer groups also may help provide military funeral honors. And congratulations and thank you to Carl S. Martin, American Legion Post 635, and Lewis E. Davis, American Legion Post 56, Combined Honor Guard, which provided military rites at 104 funerals during 2017. Families determine what type of military rites they desire, and the funeral home will coordinate the request. Options involve flag folding and presentation, prayer, rifle volley, the presence of the military service branch flag, and the playing of taps. A bagpiper may also be provided. The Combined Honor Guard often partners with the Decatur Honor Guard and with units in Springfield and Peoria when the family desires current service members to participate. The Combined American Legion McLean County Honor Guard also conducted flag ceremonies and presentations on 68 occasions during 2017, in addition to the military rites. And here are some appointments made in the military. Congressman Darren LaHood, Republican of Dunlap, has announced names of 18th Congressional District students nominated to the nation's military academy. Pantograph area nominees are Jordan Sanchez of Elkhart to the U.S. Air Force Academy, Christopher Vogel of Bloomington to the U.S. Air Force Academy, Justin Sharp, Bloomington, U.S. Air Force Academy, Shane Hickman of Normal, U.S. Military Academy, Tessa Lehman of Eureka, U.S. Military Academy, Caden Schmittner of Bloomington, U.S. Military Academy, Stephen O'Rear of Lincoln, U.S. Naval Academy, Molly Day, Normal, U.S. Naval Academy, Stephen Brown, Bloomington, U.S. Naval Academy. Today's highlight in history is that on January 15, 1943, work was completed on the Pentagon, the headquarters of the U.S. Department of War, now called the U.S. Department of Defense. And today is Monday, January 15th, the 15th day of 2018. There are 350 days left in the year. This is the Martin Luther King Jr. federal holiday. And so it is fitting that our thought for today is from the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., who lived from 1929 until 1968. And this quote from him says, "A man cannot ride your back unless it is bent." And the flick fact for today, believe it or not, Eureka College was in Eureka before even Eureka. The town was named Walnut Grove in the beginning. But by the mid-1850s, officials discovered that there actually already was a Walnut Grove in the town. So there already was a Walnut Grove. So the town was renamed Eureka after the college that was already there. And our little State Watch story says Chicago hits a new record for tourists. The Chicago mayor's office says the number of tourists to the city last year in 2017 was more than 55 million, a new record. In a Sunday statement, it says that number was an increase of 1.4 million or 2.5% compared to the year before. That figure represents a 40% increase in visitors since 2010 when there were under 39 million visitors. Their office says the record-setting year in 2017 means that the goal Mayor Rahm Emanuel set previously of reaching 55 million visitors annually by 2020 was achieved 2 years early. The Sunday statement says estimates are that the tourism industry supported more than 146,000 jobs in Chicago in 2017. We're going to take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph. Please stay tuned.